KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm thrilled to be sitting across from two-time Oscar nominee in the same year, Cynthia Erivo. She's worked with a couple of friends of our friends here, Steve McQueen on Widows, mm-hmm. and, of course, Casey Lemons for Harriet, for which yeah. she is nominated for two Academy Awards. It's a thrill to be sitting across from you.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thank
and
you.
What we were saying before we got started, it's interesting you played three African-American women whose voices, literally or figuratively, have freed people.
Great.
Between playing Harriet and Aretha Franklin in the upcoming Genius miniseries, yeah. and then playing Alberta Hunter
yeah.
in Mrs. Selfridge. And interestingly, the voice that you use those characters is all so different.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen Aretha yet, but I mean, I can tell from this kind of this Alberta was living in the moment.
Yes.
In the way you played her.
Yeah.
Very much in the moment.
Yeah.
And Harriet is trying to look ahead a lot, isn't she?
Yes, she is, very much.
Talk so. About that.
I think that's just her predisposition. She sees the future. She sees what could be. She sees what's supposed to be. And so that's, I think, a weight on her. She's consistently trying to get people to that, but no one can see it but her. And she's, you know, both trying to move people whilst trying to convince them that this is the way to go. And I just wanted to make sure that we could find something, a voice for her that felt right, that felt immediate, that felt communicative and just different to anything I had done. And I didn't want it to sound just like me, you know? Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like you. But it's interesting because I think also, too, there's a thing about her and the way you play her mm-hmm. where she's waiting to see how other people are responding.
Yeah.
And we really get to see the two scenes of bookend mm-hmm. with her master, very beginning of the movie, near the very end.
Yeah.
We can sort of hear the power in her voice the yeah. second time.
Yeah.
I mean, she's taking the lead there. She's really, it's for me, the performance is sort of broken into her watching and learning.
Yes.
And then by the end, her being in command.
Being, yeah.
And talk to me about walking yourself through all that.
Well, you know, I felt like she, and I think this is probably testament to Casey and Greg, I felt like she's written in three chapters. So you have Minty, you have Araminta, and you have Harriet. And I think that they all come from each other. To get to Harriet, you have to go from Minty. You have to start at Minty. And
you could say that was her
yeah.
birth name.
Yeah, that was Araminta was her birth name, but most people called her Minty. And then she moves through to Araminta when she's, you know, fully grown. And then she becomes Harriet the hero. And it's Moses at that point. And you, what it is that I wanted to have a steady learning of how it is that she gets to it. So, like, even the first time she makes that run, it's like tripping and falling. She's like, doesn't quite know how to get her feet, but she's fast and it's still like finding her feet. And then as she moves through and she learns what she needs, who she's supposed to be, where she's supposed to be in society, what's right for her, her footing becomes stronger. And physically, you can see it becomes stronger. So that when she makes that final run at the end and she's in that velvet and in the red and then the skirt and the jacket, it's a sure run. It's fast and there's no tripping, there's no anything. It's just, I know where I'm going and I'm going to keep moving. And I wanted to make that a measured learning experience because Harriet didn't just become Harriet from nowhere. She took the time to learn. She had to learn. She was born in a time where she was in danger at all times.
Well, literally not in possession of herself.
Correct. I think a learning had to happen where she had to learn how to be in possession of herself because that doesn't come overnight. Even now, we have to learn how to own ourselves as human beings, as the people, our personalities, our bodies. And that for a long time, up until she was 28, she'd had no ownership over that. And then all of a sudden, she was free. So she has to learn what that is to be of herself for herself before she can start doing that for other people. And I think that's the journey we're trying to take with that, really.
Because it's interesting you mentioned that run, because in that last run, that first run, you can hear her, there's a desperation
yeah.
in her breathing, there's an anxiety, she doesn't know how to control her
yeah.
body. And the last time she's running like an athlete.
Yeah.
I mean, she knows how, she's not out of breath when
yeah.
she has the encounter with him.
Yeah.
And she's flushed when she's asked to make that, I don't want to give too much of the movie away, but there's
yeah.
a big decision she has to make
yeah.
about going back, quote unquote, home.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, there's so much to talk about here because the way she reacts to the word home
yeah.
in the movie is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
You clearly seized on that, didn't you?
Yeah. Because, you know, home is not necessarily the place, it's the people, you know, and she was so desperately in love with her family and her husband that that's where home was. She needed to get those people back, and in order to make a home, she needed those people with her. And so that's where she was. That's what she was searching for, the people to create the place that she could feel was home.
It's the treat when we're talking to Academy Award nominee and winner of a bunch of other awards, Cynthia Erivo. Her newest role, of course, is Harriet, directed by Casey Lemons. But again, I was saying that I was noticing that first time when she's there on that bridge, mm-hmm. and just you can feel that she's not in control of anything, including her body, and she has to make a decision that's about control, literally and figuratively, about leaping into the future.
Yes. Yeah.
Talk about the physical affect you had in that moment, because she seems almost like a child at that moment.
Yeah, because I guess it's a life and death decision, and for her, she really had to decide about what the easier route would be. And as when you're a kid, it's the choices. What is easier to make? What do I make the easy choice, or do I do the thing that I know will either free me, even though it might kill me, or if by some freak chance I might live? Who knows? But in her head, it was either live or die, and it's such a huge moment for her to have to decide how she's going to continue on with her being, that it's almost born out of desperation. And I think that in the last, there's like a last second where clarity hits, where it's just like, I can't do the thing I've been doing for this amount of time again. So the only option is to move forward, even if moving forward means into the abyss. And so that's what she does.
Because there's that thing too, that is so interesting. You can see that fear of the future the kids often have, that even the worst of it is at least something that you know.
Yeah.
And the quality of beseeching in Joe Alwyn's voice, and he's almost, well, home.
Yeah.
You understand home, don't you?
Right.
Well, that's your home, but it's not my home or anybody I know. None of my loved ones, it's not their home.
No.
It's almost like that word, that single use of that word propels her into that leap.
Yeah. Because she knows it's a lie, you know? She knows that she's been kept in a place that isn't her home. It's more like a stable, you know? It's not a place for her to live. And that's the word, to live somewhere. She can't do that. She has to exist there for someone else's keeping, for someone else's use. And when he says home, it's almost like an insult, you know? Yes, that's where my family is, but that's not home for us. I can't be there again for your bidding. And I think she also knows that it will just be worse when she goes back.
That's what makes the last scene in the movie so powerful for me, because it is really the embodiment of home.
I mean,
we've heard these sick perversions of what home is supposed to be. And she's walking into her house and closes the door behind her. And there's this look of complete peace on her face.
Yeah. And it's so strange. When we discussed what that final shot might be, I asked if it was possible for me to, for the first time, look into the camera. Because I felt like it was a moment that I wanted people to know she was okay. Might not be the end of the work, but she's okay. And she can rest for a little bit, you know? The idea that she could walk into the arms of her father and her mother, her family would all be there, which is what she was fighting for this whole entire time, into a house that she owned, with a door that she can close, that no one can come into. I knew that she needed to be the last person to close the door, look into the camera and say I was okay. Not with a big teethy grin, just a smile of, I'm finished.
It's kind of a beatific smile, isn't it? I mean, it's almost like, because I think about this too, that jump over into the bridge is really like a kind of death and rebirth.
Yes. Yeah.
And she gets to go. She acknowledges
that
this control, I mean, that she's never really had until that point in the movie, she's finally got that control in that last moment, doesn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah, she has all the things that she has wanted from the beginning that I think even at that bridge didn't know that she would get at all. I think that bridge was, I'm not going to make it, but I'm okay. I'd rather be dead than not free. And then she gets a chance and takes that chance and is fighting the whole entire time to get to that moment at the end. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things to know that the fight that some of us have to make, to do, is simply to have peace of mind and a door that we can close that's our own. And that's what she has. And I think by the end of that, to be able to be in that place with the people she loves and her own space, her own space around her, like to have ownership over that, is really, really special.
Yeah. I just find myself thinking so much about the way you physically embody characters. And the reason I brought up Alberta Hunter to you is that she had this swinger's confidence in this.
Yes,
and would you talk about that? Because she doesn't get a lot of screen time, but she completely owns any room she walks into. Like she she's there. She's like, I've always been here. This is my place.
Yeah,
talk about that performance. But
I, when I knew that I was playing her, I started looking at videos of her and watching her perform. Even when she was, I think up until she was 80 something, she was still performing. And there's just something like, it's hard to describe. There's just something that's like a devil may care. Just it doesn't, I'm here because I'm supposed to be here and you're all going to watch me and I'm going to perform and I'm going to sing my song and you're going to want to listen. And I'm the best at it. There was just something about her that I felt needed to be shown on screen, because I felt like it was very individual, very singular about her, which I had not seen in a lot of performers of her time. She really like took her ownership. She really took her space and did it for a really long time.
I've been noticing, too, that it's one of those performances where, and I'm glad to get a chance to meet you to see you do this, you don't smile a whole lot on screen.
No.
And there's a lot of smiling. She takes pleasure in every moment.
Absolutely.
She?
I think that there's something that happens when she's on stage where she knows that everyone is in the palm of her hand. And so it doesn't matter who's in the building, doesn't matter where they come from, rich, poor, white, black, Chinese, whatever. It's her stage, her room, her space, and you're in it. And she's just welcoming you. It's up to her whether she likes to, she might catch your eye or she might point at you, or she might say something cheeky because she can. And I think that's just her way, which I've found really fascinating.
Given that time, especially given that place where she was.
Yes. She just should. It's not a thing that you would have seen very often of performers, black women of that time who were performers. And a lot of us were shy and we would kowtow, but she just didn't. I just thought, she's a rock star. I think she's a rock star. I think that, you know, learning about her, I was super fascinated by her and I really wanted to learn more about why she was like that, because she was like that her whole life. You know, the things that she was able to get into. I think she did she do like a theater performance or something? I think it was Porgy and Bess. I was just like, this woman is incredible and was one of the first women to be around that time. And she traveled the world. She was in London around that time. And she was on, I think she was on the West End as well. She just did so much with her life and took it all in her stride, that I felt like it was important that if I was going to grace the screen as her, I wanted to own those moments.
Have you found people responding to that? Because it's the first thing I wanted to ask you about when we sat down here.
When we were doing this particular piece?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so strange. Everybody was like fawning almost, just by accident. They all seemed to want to like be in the space when I was singing and as her, which is a really lovely thing to feel, because it just spurred me on to go as far as I could.
Because I could feel your pleasure in those moments,
too. Oh, absolutely. I love it. I love it when you get to play those characters who just don't care. Who are just like, I love it. I love myself and I love what I'm doing. And I know that you do, too. So let's just play. You know, it's fabulous.
Well, I'm loving this, too. We're going to take a break. I'm taking a little bit of pleasure with my guest, Cynthia Erivo, 2-time Oscar nominee. And this very year for Harriet is The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We're still taking pleasure. It's The Treatment. My guest is Cynthia Erivo. She's the star and performed the Oscar-nominated song from the movie Harriet. But this is something I wanted to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. I'm so often struck by your physicality and performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember seeing Color Purple and just being exhausted sitting in the show by the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how you dial into the kind of energy each of these characters needs. Because we're talking about how Alberta Hunter, whose sense of control and whose sense of reading a room and being completely impervious to other people's reactions, because so many of these characters you play are people who read rooms but have to be furtive about it. You think about Belle in Widows, poor Darlene and El Royale, who's basically hiding in plain sight almost all the time. Yeah. And in the second third of Harriet, she becomes furtive because she's gathering information and doesn't want to give too much away.
Yeah.
How do you find out a way to sort of to convey that in physical terms? Because you do it very differently for all three of these, at least for the characters I've seen you do.
For me, I feel like the language of a character starts with their body anyway. So I, you know, whether it be pictures or the script.
Does that come from being a stage performer where you have to be aware of the audience reacting to you physically?
I think so. And I think that a person's rhythm comes from the way they move almost. I think it even comes into the way they speak. Say, for instance, Celie is in a household where she has to protect herself consistently. And so what that meant was I knew that it meant that I needed to move fast, I needed to be quiet, I needed to be stealth, I needed to make myself smaller. I'm 5'1", and you have to make yourself smaller is a task, but you have to figure out ways in which you... She disappeared. Celie needed to disappear, and she found ways to do that. And that then lends itself into the way she speaks. So if your chest is concaved and your shoulders are over because you don't want to get hit and you're trying to protect yourself from getting hurt, then you get quieter.
And that first song is really that kind of hiding inside the song, isn't it?
Yeah. And I love trying to find the bodies of each of these characters because they're very different. And the time will tell you where they are as well. When you're looking at Darlene, she's 60s, 50s. So the shape of women was different then. So she... And always in a heel. So she has to move differently anyway, because that's just what it was. And she's a performer, so she's always pulled together. No matter how desperate the situation is, the hair is always done, the makeup is always done, the outfit is always together. She's in a pencil skirt, she can't move very fast. She's in a heel, so she can't move very fast. So everything on top of that is like, it's all held together. So she has to move slightly differently because of where she is. And it takes her time to break out of that because she's in a desperate situation and has to be different. And then you have Harriet, who is in a corset for the entire thing. And I discovered looking at the pictures that she actually was in a corset all the time.
You can see those pictures and how small her waist is.
Tiny. But again, coming from where she was coming from, having to be of service to people consistently, having to not own her body. So it's finding ways to not get into trouble, which means finding ways to disappear. And then having to learn how to take back that ownership and find a way to shake off all of the things that have been put on her to rebirth herself and become a person of her own. So that moment when she says, "Don't tell me what to do," you know, it's not a case of just defiance. It's a case of I've been told what to do my entire life and I will not be told what to do again. I'm doing what I want, you know? And that, again, has to change a person's body, because when you accept that you will not be told what to do, you change the way you move, you know? And you meet an Alberta Hunter who is just in ownership, full ownership of it. She's singing jazz and she knows what she's doing. She knows that she's
jazz sexy. Jazz was dirty.
Yes, and proud of it. You know, making those sounds, singing those words, knowing that people are looking and, you know, curious and leaning right into it. So there has to be a different movement. So it's hands are everything. Everything's a bit looser because it's sexy and the drop waist is in at this point. So she's not having to really wear a bra, doesn't really need to wear a corset. And so it's all, everything is looser.
But also, it's in watching you know, it's the same thing. Yeah. It's in the effect of her shoulders, where she lets her arms hang because she knows that she can move and people are watching her and she wants to be watched and is aware of the movement of her hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about movement on radio, an odd thing to do with my guest, Cynthia Erivo. She's the star of Harriet. It's The Treatment. But I was thinking about this, too, because I wanted to ask you, Do you find yourself attracted to characters who do have to keep information away from others? I mean, because you played so many of them. Going to Sealy, which is the first time I saw you really do anything, yeah. I've seen you so often playing these people whose body language is about just fostering information that they don't want others to have and not giving themselves away.
I think I end up leaning towards them because it means that they have a real internal dialogue. And so I think what I love about that is that I have to find a way to share that internal struggle, dialogue, speech, world with people. And that's a challenge, to have to share something without speaking. And I think I end up leaning into those characters because they're the most challenging for me.
It becomes a way to play subtext for you?
Yes, yeah.
That's such a hard thing to do, I think. And so often when actors are playing those kinds of things, you know, part of it is you want to tell people something.
Yeah.
And people may either go slack, holding in too much, or try to communicate in ways that tell us, that they're too telegraphing much, to us that that they know. And you've arrived at a place in film and on stage where you can do this. And it's a remarkable talent be able to do this kind of thing.
Thank you. I think I just have always enjoyed the idea that communication is not doesn't have to be vocal and doesn't have to be movement. That you can be just as alive with your eyes, the way you breathe, the way you move your lips. This is a strange thing. When I watched Devil Wears Prada is one of my favorites, not because of like the content. I love fashion clearly. But the one thing
based on those shoes, I would have to say yes.
I do. But there's something that's really wonderful that Meryl Streep is doing the entire time, and it's very subtle. It's all like internal things that come through, and it's like with the purse of a lip, or a shake of a head, or like the way she lengthens a word, and like those small things tell you all of the things that she's thinking, and it's like in a split second, and you sort of like, oh, that was cold. There's this one scene where the protagonist, Andy, comes into the room and she goes, and it's after, she's about to leave, and Miranda Priestly, played by Meryl Streep, says to her, just one more thing. Andy comes back in and she just looks at her shoes and goes, that's all. And that is all that needs to be said for, if you don't change those shoes right now, I'm throwing you out of this office. And it's just the subtlety in that. There's so much fun in playing those small moments and those very full life decisions in one word or a look or a, I don't know, a facial position or a smile or a squint or those. I relish those things because I think that they're the gems that you get in film when you get to watch people.
So funny you mention this, because a couple of weeks ago we were talking with the authors of a book on Mike Nichols, and you know, she's doing an impression of Mike Nichols in that, right down to wearing his hairpiece. She's doing Mike, the way he holds a pause, and he uses a pause as judgment. It's all Mike Nichols. But anyway, this gets me to something that you also do, and it's a lot of Harriet, which people aren't really talking about. There's a lot of silence in that performance, which is really, again, and a lot of things you've done on stage and on camera, you're playing people who aren't talking.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that is you sort of saying, well, I don't want to talk here. Give me a beat so I can do this versus it being on the page. Because it happens enough that it feels like it's your determination to me as a viewer.
There are definitely times when maybe I'm glutton for punishment. There are definitely times when I've looked at the script and I've gone, does she need to say that? Can she not say that? Can it be in a look? Can it be in a breath? Because I think sometimes over-explanation is never, I don't think that's helpful. I think that's, as people, when we speak to each other, we don't always need someone to say something for us to know something. And I think that that's what I'm most interested in. I'm most interested in what someone says when they aren't saying anything. Usually the person that you pay attention to the most sometimes is the person who's not saying anything in the room, because you realize that everyone else is talking and they're saying nothing. So by the end of the night, everyone's going to be like, are you okay? Because this person's saying nothing. And that I feel like that's also important. Silence is also just as loud as a speech, I think.
It's a treat when we're talking about active listening with my guest, Cynthia Erivo. She's a star of Harriet. In watching you do this, I wonder if there's somebody in your life you glean this from, somebody who was that that watchful and that effective of being watchful that you
probably
pay attention.
Probably my mom. My mom used to do this. So, like, if we, say, for instance, it's busy and my sister and I in the back of the car and we're talking and we're loud and doing too much, and it's, my mom would just look, she would look at me and stop. It'd be a look up and down, and she wouldn't say anything. She'd turn back to the car, and that was enough. That was enough to say, stop, you're doing too much. And I think that, I don't know, I picked up on that. The idea that you can, that was loud to me. That was like her yelling. That was loud in my ears. So I think that and my mum's not, she's not a loud person. I think she's always had a way of communicating things without having to really say very much. I always know when she's upset. I always know when she's really happy. Sometimes she has an energy about her, which I think I like to lean into. To finding the energy in a person, in a character, I think speaks volumes. And I guess that's probably what I've picked it up from, because she has conversations, but she doesn't need to say very much. She can just say, hi, Cynthia, and I know she misses me. You know, she'll call and she'll go, where are you today? Do you miss me, Mum? Yeah. I just know. It's the sound of the word. It's not necessarily the word she's saying. It's just how she said it. And it doesn't have to be very much. And I think from that, I've learned that you can really communicate with very little. Yeah.
What you're doing is really defining for me what the essence of acting is, which is communicating.
Yeah.
And in all the ways that we do as people. And so often it doesn't involve dialogue or talking about one thing, but actually saying something else, which I think you do so well too, because I think about those songs, Better Hunter, where the lyrics are saying one thing, but the look she's registering is saying something else entirely different. And she's regarding almost every person in that room as she's singing.
Yeah.
That idea of communication, is that what attracted you to acting in the first place?
Yes, that and being able to tell the stories of people who might not have their stories told, like assuming different people and living their lives for a little bit and finding different ways to communicate as different people. Like, I just love that. It's how I feel about singing. The idea that you can communicate a whole feeling with a verse of a song or a chorus, and you can change someone's mood because you sang a certain note, or, like, for me, that's the thing about acting and singing. It's to communicate with people, making connections with people who you wouldn't normally make connections with, but because for some reason they lean into that song that you did, or that character you played, or that woman that felt like that they recognized themselves in, you get to make connections and share moments with people who you might not make that with if you met them in the street. Like, I think there's something really special about that.
Because it's so much about what you do, and I think this obviously reflects on being a person of color, is understanding where power is in the room.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had to navigate rooms consistently and figure out how to not be the least powerful in the room. And then you learn that, I think I have also learned that, I've learned how to do that without having to say very much. You know, to be in a room and be the one with the most power in the room, but without having to say very much. I've had to learn how to do that so that, I guess, to be protective, to protect myself from being taken advantage of or being ignored. You just learn. And I think that it's human nature to want to not be prey in the room.
I'm sorry we're out of time, because that's a great place to end it. Thank you so much for doing this, Cynthia.
Thank you. My pleasure.
My guest is Cynthia Erivo, who probably will continue to do great, great, great things. Please come back when you do Aretha.
Absolutely.
Will you do that?
Okay,
of course. She's going to be playing Aretha Franklin later this year in Genius. She is now Harriet Tubman. And Harriet, a recording engineer here at NPR West, is Patrick Murray. The show was mixed, edited by Kat Yore. Next time, I'm going to wear my off-white SBs. It's The Treatment.
Yes.
Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
K-C-R-W. KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.